Hello, everybody. This is Jake Sanzino, host of Jake and Gino Podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, the chef, the father, six, the best-selling author, the daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Jake, you didn't say anything about the studio. Do you like the studio?
It I don't think your like volume's on.
This morning, putting this thing together, my wife isn't here. Usually, the wife is here hitting buttons. I'm like praying to God, say, please, please work. I'm just saying to myself, I hope it works. That's why I beat you this morning, bro. How you doing?
So, today we have a very special guest. Today we have the co-founder of the Small Giants community as well. He is also a best-selling author, speaker on entrepreneurship, culture, and leading a purpose-driven life. So without further ado, Paul Spiegelman, welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
It is our pleasure. Big fans of the community and the book, but let's hear a little bit about your story and how you got started in business.
Well, I kind of fell into business. I had gone to law school after college and became a lawyer working with my dad for a couple of years. My older brother was probably the entrepreneur because he never could work for anyone else. So he had his own alarm company and he was installing alarms for people's homes and approached my younger brother and I at the time and said, you know, we should get into business together. And so we ended up getting into a business called ERS, Emergency Response Systems, that provided medical alert systems for elderly and people with medical conditions because our grandfather was in and out of the hospital. You've heard of systems like this, like the commercials, I fall and I can't get up, right? That wasn't us. We never sold to the public, but we developed a little unit.
That was the biggest joke of my childhood. That and the Great Poupon commercial. We were all about, yes. I fall and I can't get up, and pardon me.
Yeah.
Do you have any Great Poupon?
Exactly. So we, but this was long before those commercials and everything, but we, he was the kind of technical genius in the family. And so he developed a unit that could go in people's homes. And when elderly people or people with medical conditions needed help, they could press this button. And we set up an 8x10 room in the conference room above our law office. To be our little response center. So if a call came in, we could handle it. So we were one of those bootstrap businesses, the three of us trading shifts on a cot 24/7, waiting for calls to come in and going out to people's homes and installing these units and trying to charge them $25 a month. We couldn't afford to advertise or anything. And so we would go to local hospitals and ask them to provide the service to their patients. And we would charge the people in the home. So we had this kind of very small recurring revenue business, got to the point where I think we had $2,500 in revenue a month, not a lot for three guys to get on by, but said, okay, we need to raise some money. So we tried to raise money, tried to raise $1,000,002 in $15,000 increments, and we raised $15,000 because everybody saw.
I love mom, right?
Are, yeah, young, you know, energetic, but no experience. So we just put our head down and just kept working at it. And as everyone knows in business, these events happen along the way to kind of change the course. One night I was working and a call came in and a 93-year-old woman had pressed her button. And it turned out that she had been beaten and stabbed and locked in a closet. And we saved her life. Get a awesome front page story in the LA Times. So that kept us going. But the business we ultimately grew was one that one of our clients had asked us about, and they said that they had a service that they offered to the community, this hospital. So when people call from the community looking for a doctor, they give names of doctors on their list. It's called a physician referral service. And they thought that my two brothers and I sitting there in this room 24/7 could put in a phone line, answer it in their name, and give out names of doctors. And so we said, sure, we started doing it. And that's the business that became ultimately called Barrel Health, that we grew, serving about 500 hospitals all over the US, grew the business from LA, moved it to Dallas. Long story there that I won't get into, but ultimately grew it to about 400 employees and almost $40 million in revenue. So that was a long run in our business. I ended up selling the business in 2012 to a large public company. But along the way, what we realized was that we were a different kind of company. And that's essentially we were a call center company. So when you think of a call center, you're not thinking of high morale and high engagement and purpose and all this stuff.
How the hell do we hire employees to get in the call center? That's what you think
about,
right?
Yeah. So, but we wanted to do things differently. And I think we were raised by our parents just to have good values. And so we started treating our employees that way. And they told us that what we were doing was unique. And so then we said, there's something here that we could create a business that is built on purpose and values, and at the same time, build a profitable, sustainable business. And that's really what we did. And that became my passion in business, is the idea that if we create an environment in which people love what they do every day, no matter what business that they're in, we're going to get the best work out of them, and we're going to build a sustainable and successful business. And so culture and values and all of that really became what was so important to me, and still is in my career.
When did you get involved with Small Giants?
Well, back in 2007, I wrote a book, my first book, about culture and kind of autobiographical, I guess, about our journey. And I came upon this book, Small Giants, by Bo Burlingham, Companies That Choose to Be Great Instead of Big, and read it and said, oh my gosh, I am inspired and motivated, and read these stories about 14 small privately held companies and what them made them special and unique, and immediately identified with these leaders and said, those are the kind of people I want to be
same
around.
Experience, by the way, same yeah. Exact experience when I picked it up. Yeah.
So having just finished my manuscript, I write a blind email to Bo. I said, you don't know me, but I loved your work. I just wrote this book on culture. Would you consider writing a foreword for my book? He said, yes. I was blown away. 2 months later, I get this beautiful foreword for my book. And that just started this relationship, and we became friends. And for a long time, I was talking to him about how there were so many other people like me that read the book that would resonate with this. And as kind of a self-described introvert, reserved, I'm not a big networker. If I can find people in business who have this same thinking, the same heart for culture and passion for purpose, that's who I want to hang out with. I said, let's start a community so we can grow together. We can learn from each other. We can teach each other. And this took 2 years. And ultimately one night we're sitting at dinner and he says, Paul, look, I'm just a writer. I'm not a business person, but if you want to do this, take it, run with it, I'll support you any way I can. So that's how we started back in 2010. We started the Small Giants community to bring this group together.
There's like two quotes that I like to share. One from Bo's book, which really resonates with me. Big does not equal great, and great does not equal big. I think that's where Jake and I were in our journeys. We don't need to have 17,000 units. We don't need to be making X. We just want to have a really great, I want to have a really great family feeling company where I'm worrying about my employees, where my family can be involved, where I have those core values firing every day. And I want to write the second one down that really resonated with me a couple of years ago. Revenue is vanity, profit margin is sanity, and cash is king. I think most of us always think about the top line. That's what we're focusing on. How much are we grossing? At the end of the day, Jake and I really focus on what we call profit per unit, profit per door. That's what we're focused on. Now, once again, Small Giants, here's the book and the community. That's what we're focused on. I think throughout this conversation, I want all of you who are listening, does this resonate with you? And if it does, go over there, because we're not all created to be the next Facebook, the next Uber, the next Airbnb, and that's okay. It seems as if we are, because that's all we're showing these images on Instagram. But when Jake and I read the book instantly, I'm like, I need to interview Bo right away. And I need to get Paul on to share his story. Because for those entrepreneurs out there that don't want to have 17,000 units, that would be comfortable with 100 units or 200 units and live the lifestyle, that's okay. And this book and his organization and his group really, I think, is a huge proponent of that. Bo, you want to add anything to that before I hand you with the next question?
No, I think something that people, that's maybe a misconception about Small Giants, is that these are companies that don't want to grow. Mm-hmm. And that couldn't be further from the truth. We're just saying that we want to grow with purpose. We want to grow for a reason. We want to make the world a better place. And we want to do it in a way that we have intimacy with all of our stakeholders, and primarily our employees. And I used to say in my company that our company existed to enhance the lives of the people that work here. And if I can create an environment like that, then I know that I'm going to get the best out of them, and we're going to be able to touch their lives. I still, just last night, I got a LinkedIn invitation from a woman that worked with my company back in the mid-90s. She says, you know, you may not remember me. She just sent me these pictures last night that were incredible, and talked about that we had touched her and impacted her that many years ago. She said, even your dad, my dad didn't even work in the business, but somehow he must have been there one day. And she said, I learned a big lesson from your dad while he was cleaning cups of coffee in the kitchen. That's ultimately what impact is about. But the fact is, you don't have to choose. I'm going to build a successful, financially successful business, or I'm going to be focused on people and culture. You can absolutely do both. And in my opinion, one kind of leads to another. It's hard to identify with the big fast growth companies, and you know, all power to them. You know, if you want to be the next Facebook or you want to just be a huge company, there's ways to get there. And if you're wired that way, that's great for you. But most of us identify with the ability to simply put our heads down, work hard, grow a business, support our families, build security for the future, and impact people's lives. And that can be done in many different ways and without sacrificing.
I'm going to share Paul's core purpose and vision. It's to identify, connect, and develop purpose-driven businesses. And his vision is to make a positive impact by providing the platform and content for purpose-driven leaders to connect and learn from one another. Now, as I read that, I want everyone to think, do you have a vision? Do you have core values? And if you don't, guess what, everybody? That's the homework assignment for after you get off of this podcast. I want to go over the 10 elements of great culture, because as I'm saying this to Paul, I'm going to read them all off. I want you all to get it. I'm going to have Paul hit two or three of them. But as you're writing your core values, how are you going to hire your next person? How are you going to set expectations with your team if they don't know what your vision is, if they don't know what your core purpose is? He's got Paul here, the 10 elements. Number one, everybody, core values. Number two, camaraderie. Number three, celebrations. Four is community. Five is communication. Six is caring. Number seven, Jake likes this one, commitment to learning. That's a huge one, everybody. Eight is consistency. Nine is connect. And number 10 is chronicles. Paul, which ones would you like to highlight or focus on for the listeners?
Well, I think, as you said, the foundation of all this is purpose, vision, and values. And if we look at values, okay, well, what are values? To me, values are those behaviors that we have in our business that no matter what else changes in our business will never change. Everything else is going to change as we grow and expand. But if we have sort of this code of ethics with how we behave, how we treat each other, that allows people to make decisions based on those values. And that's ultimately where I saw that we were being successful. When people would look at big decisions, go back to the values and say, hey, this might be violating one of those core values. And so going through that exercise to determine what is important for you. And I don't mean as the leader or as the entrepreneur solely. This is something that needs to be an inclusive exercise. What is purpose? Purpose really is how we make the world a better place. And there's lots of different ways to do values and purpose, lots of exercises, lots of consultants that have different ways of doing it. There's no one right or wrong way. Vision is really more that future position that says, okay, it's 5 years from now, it's 10 years from now, what do we look like? And I think the reason I think that's so important is that if we haven't articulated that, if we haven't gone through that exercise, if we're not living those values every day and questioning ourselves, it's going to be hard to do any of the other nine things that I talk about. It's also going to be hard to really feel like your team is on track at all times. And I don't mean doing this exercise and then putting the poster together and putting a plaque on the wall, because that's what we all do, is we see the mission statements and all that. We're talking about how we live this every day. And that's kind of what we teach. Another one I think is really important is this idea of caring. And it may sound simple, like caring, like do we care, do we not care? Well, I think it's critical that as leaders, we show our employees that we care about them in the totality of their lives. And it's important to do that in ways that they feel. And sometimes as leaders, we just feel like, okay, well, we have employees and we're paying you to do the job and you're getting a nice paycheck and that's enough. Well, you know, it's not enough. And as we grow our businesses, what I found that when you're small and you've got 10 employees or 20 employees and you're kind of like a family, you know, you're all very well connected. And nowadays, especially, it's really important to connect with people and connect about their personal lives and all that. But I found that culture, like any other process in your organization, needs to be a process. It needs to be respected as a process like any other process you would have. So for example, how would I know when we got to 100 employees or 200 employees as the CEO that something was going on in the life of one of our employees, a milestone event, a birth, a death, son graduated from college, daughter ran a marathon. So we had an internal program called Barrel Cares, an intranet site. And any of our managers could go to that site when they heard of someone on their team that had a life event. They'd enter this event. It immediately sends me an email. I would get that email. That's my trigger to act. So now I can pull out and write a personal note card, or I can go visit someone in the hospital, or I can buy some flowers. But that was a way sort of behind the scenes to make sure that we were consistent across the board and didn't lose that personal touch. So the idea of caring, of learning, of all of these things that we think are important in the community is that we have to build them and institutionalize them over time, because it's really easier to do when you're small. But as you grow, how do you scale this portion of the business as well? And that seems to be what's most challenging for people.
You know, I'm going to say something. As you start to scale and grow a company, you need to have guidelines and procedures and policies. And I think the key to caring at time is breaking the rules. And sometimes life happens and you have certain policies and procedures in place, standard operating procedures. You need to be willing to break the rules sometimes for the good of the human. And it may be against the company's policies. And your HR person may say, well, if you do this here, you're going to have to do it over. Look, sometimes as a leader, you need to be willing to break the rules to do the right thing for the human. And I think that's the mentality that I take towards this many times, because it may be unpopular too. And they may say, well, this is going to come up again. And you may be right. But sometimes you need to be willing to break the rules for the good of the human, even though it goes against your policies. And I think as a small giant, you're able to be nimble and do that. As a Facebook or something else, it ain't happening because the bureaucracy gets in the way. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, no, I totally agree. I can give you a perfect example of that. Just that example you used was one of the times when I felt like our values were really entrenched. When we were sitting in a leadership meeting and something had happened where someone had violated a tenet of that in our HR manual said, well, according to Section 3C, this is what we're supposed to do. And someone raised their hand on the team and said, you know, hold on. One of our core values is always do the right thing. And doing the right thing in this situation is not in what's in the
manual. Contradicts with the handbook.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
Ah, that's so beautiful. So it shows the importance of, as you said, doing for the human element what's most important. And yes, as a smaller, more nimble organization, you wish as larger organizations could do that. It's much harder. So here it goes all back to that core value, though.
Values trump policy.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the key.
And Jake, Paul just gave me the idea. At Jake and Gino, we have a lot of our students who have life events. We have little onesies made for people who have babies that make it happen. We send flowers out to people who lose loved ones, but it's harder and harder to find out what's going on. So to get in front of it, he just gave me the idea of I have to figure something out and put something in that private Facebook group or something out when something does happen. We want to find out. That's what the company is all about. And we're at that size that we can implement it now and grow within it, because there's only so many things that you can catch throughout the day on Facebook or a life event. So everyone out there, that is huge. And once you implement that, it does give your company purpose, because one of our core values is people first. So whether they're residents of our apartments, whether they're investors, whether they're Jake and Gino students. So that is something that we're going to implement. I love that, Paul. Thanks for sharing that with us. I want to ask you this question. What problems or what do you see small giants mistakes? What mistakes do these small giants, companies like Jake and myself and yours, what mistakes do you see them making?
I think that what happens when you take on these kinds of practices. And many, I think the biggest question we get from people that come to our community is, I get this. I understand it. I just don't know how to do it. And so what we teach is very practically how to implement and to continue to sustain these kind of practices over time. What I think the biggest challenge is that at some point we're going to hit challenges in our businesses. Every business go through that, right? We all just are, well, maybe at the end of a pandemic where everybody shut down. And so it's been an incredible couple of years. But what happens when we go through maybe super growth or challenges in our business or things that happen quickly, we tend to start to take away some of the smaller things. We tend to maybe take away some of the budget to buy those onesies or to do that training or development that we were committed to. Because guess what? We got a big project. We got to work on it. We got to do it now. And we make a big mistake by taking away those things that were so important, the small things that were so important to people. We start taking them away because we're under pressure for whatever reason and don't realize the impact that that's having. And so the real lesson there is don't take away those small things. I will tell you a quick story that when I sold my company in 2012, I went to work for the company that bought mine, but not running my company any longer. I became chief culture officer of this multinational public company with 25,000 employees. And their primary business was not ours, but it was doing medical waste disposal in hospitals and, you know, really tough work. And they had these treatment plants all over the country. And I would go and visit these treatment plants, and they would have truck drivers that worked at these treatment plants. And I remember going to these meetings and visiting them. And one year, I get a message as chief culture officer from one of their locations that they had an uprising, so to speak, of their truck drivers. Well, what happened? Well, this year it was going to be Thanksgiving in a couple of weeks. And the local manager said to the truck drivers at the morning meeting, he said, "Hey, guys, you know, every year we buy you these Thanksgiving pies. But we're in the fourth quarter. We are trying to hit a number, and we've kind of heard from the corporate office, we got to cut wherever we can. Unfortunately, this year, we're not going to be able to do the Thanksgiving pies."
Pies. So, we're so fucking pies, right, everybody? Pies.
So,
get in
so
there and make the fucking pies if you have to for these guys. Cut the bullshit. So,
a driver raises his hand and says, "Wait a minute. I'm sorry, but I just saw the stock price this morning, and you're telling us you can't give us a friggin' pie?" Right. And these truck drivers, I mean, these guys are all tatted up.
Don't
guys,
mess with you know, truckers. Walk, I'm telling yeah, you, don't mess with truckers.
Their trucks that morning, heads down. And so of course I was humiliated. I just said, okay, how did this happen? And so I did some investigation. And I said to the CEO of the company, I said, you know, when you issued a statement that says we're trying to cut costs, did you expect that your local managers would make decisions like this? And no, but it shows sort of the blind faith that people have, cut costs, do whatever. So they start cutting the most important thing to people, or they cut out that weekly training that we used to do, et cetera. So my message there is that when you commit to running a values-driven organization, when you commit to doing the small things that make people feel important, don't ever give that up because that you'll hurt more in the long run. And not only the morale will suffer, but the business will suffer.
That's a great segue into my next question. That's the demise of a small giant. What else should Jake and Gino and all those other companies out there aspiring to be a small giant? What else should be on the lookout for us to kill our own companies? I think the core values, the culture, taking that stuff away. What else do we need to be really wary of?
Yeah, I think the other one that comes to mind is the ability to weed the garden with your team. And that the weed the garden is a phrase I use from a mentor of mine that told me long ago that over time, if we're honest, that the business is going to outgrow some of the talent that we have. And we're going to need to make changes even in our leadership team to get to the next level. We also have this thought that, well, if we run a culture-focused business or we act like a family, it's going to be kumbaya, that when somebody doesn't perform, that we're going to be extra lenient and we're going to keep them around and it's just okay. Well, that's not the case at all. Being a small giant is having the courage to make the tough decisions, having the courage to let somebody go when they don't perform. When that person is being negative, when they are a cancer in the organization, be willing to say, "You're out," right?
It's a culture killer. You have to.
You have to. And so as leaders, it's the toughest thing in the world to do. I've heard every excuse in the book. Well, this person still contributes something. We're not going to get the budget to replace them. It'll take forever to find someone, all of those things. And then when you finally make that decision, when you let someone go that doesn't belong, I said, "Tell me a time when you actually suffered." I've never had one in all the years person say, "Well, we actually suffered." Why? Because everybody else pulls together, does the job, and they're looking at you and saying, "What took you so long?"
The idea of the fear is scarier than the reality, folks.
It is.
As simple as that.
And I read something, I think it was Jim Collins that said years ago, when you know in your gut that person doesn't belong in your organization, you have the obligation to act now. They have a family. They may thrive somewhere else, and you're doing no one favors by not acting. So we're all bad at it. We all procrastinate, but the sooner we do that, the better we all are.
Everybody's hiring right now too.
Yeah. And so having the right people in the right seats at the right time is really, to me, what leadership is about, and having the courage to act when appropriate.
Smallgiants.org is the website, everybody. What other resources would you recommend, Paul, for anyone thinking about becoming the next small giant?
Well, we have lots of free content. There's no membership or fees or anything like that. So we have lots of resources for people to go. We have our own leadership academy where we do teach values-driven leadership, and people can be certified as values-driven leaders. There's other organizations as well that promote these kind of practices, which is great. What we want to see is that rather than us being special, unique, we want this to be the way companies run. And we got a ways to go to get there. What we find is that people like to learn from other practitioners. So we are really a community of practitioners, not so much consultants. These are people that are in the mix, doing the work, making mistakes, want to learn and grow together. And so I think that as I learned years ago, when I thought I knew everything, I knew nothing, started reading business books and go, oh my gosh, I have so much to learn. Is that it's really important to reach out and ask, reach out and learn. I'm a huge believer in mentors. I've had and continue to have wonderful people in my life. And anybody that's had any level of experience is generally more than willing to share those experiences with you. Lastly, I would say that we're in the relationship business. I don't care whether you're in real estate or you're in call centers or what business that you're in the relationship business with those that you are working with, whether it's your employees, your suppliers, your clients, your team. And if we maximize those relationships, if we put our heads down, we have good values, and we're going to succeed in business and in life.
Jake, before we go to the short answer questions in the break, I just want to challenge everyone listening to this. Paul said something earlier on about him being in a company of a call center and not being sexy. Well, look at Chick-fil-A. Look at all these fast food places. Look at all these other entities that aren't high wage paying places. I'm the perfect example. I owned the restaurant for years, and that was my excuse. Well, they're not getting paid enough. They're not motivated. What was I lacking? I was lacking a purpose. I was lacking a vision, and I was lacking those core values. Go back and listen to those 10 C's for the 10 elements of great culture. Start working on it and stop making excuses. So I challenge you all out there who are listening to this. If you're struggling right now, probably one of the big things is you are not committed to core values and to a purpose and to a vision.
No doubt about that. All right, gang, let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now. All right, we are back. Now, this is the challenge for the folks that haven't read Small Giants yet, or specifically the younger males in the audience. Myself, guilty as hell. When you're starting out, we're in the multifamily business. Everyone wants to grow to owning $1 billion of assets, buy all the apartment buildings in the world. The problem is, until you're in it and until you're managing people, it's hard to actually see. So how do you tell the young, hungry go-getter out there that wants to grow mentally in his mind as big as possible? How do you translate the benefits to being a small giant? Because I think it's very hard for somebody that has big eyes to see the value and the benefit of this when maybe they grew up middle class and all they're seeing is dollar signs.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it's been a pleasure for me over the years to meet a lot of young people wide-eyed that want to grow in business and in life. And what I then see are those that actually follow through on those desires, whether it is seeking knowledge, learning to grow, building new relationships. And so I think it takes a special person to have what's necessary to commit to these kinds of things that we have been talking about. That said, I think that the younger person of today is more than ever looking not just for making big dollars, but looking to make impact. And that's why we see people moving in companies, and people would say, oh, the young people they're just fickle. They're going to job hop and all that. It's like, good for them. You know, until they find a place that is where they feel like they're valued and they love what they do and they're making an impact, then keep looking, keep trying. And so I'm not out to convince somebody who says that I want to be $1 billion, entrepreneur, go do it. You know, it's been done before.
I'm not knocking growth. I'm not knocking growth. I'm knocking a lack of awareness and realization of the benefit of growing a purposeful driven company, a company that's promoting on values. And that's what I'm trying to be clear on here, because I didn't realize it. I came out with wide eyes and dollar signs. And until I lived it, I didn't get it. And what happens? You get out over your skis at times chasing growth, and the company suffers. You lose great team members on the way up because you're not focused on the right things. And I love growth. And that's the thing. And it's to your point earlier, I still love growth. I want to grow this thing as responsibly and as big as possible. I just have been there where we've gotten out over our skis before, and we've done deals that we haven't absolutely loved. And that's what I'm trying to coach people and have them avoid. Get the right people on the team, grow together. Because here's the thing, we do, it's not the ESOP plan, but we have our team members investing in our deals. So they're growing with us. They're growing right alongside us. If, you know, we have a certain criteria, if you meet that, you can start putting your own dollars to work. So now we're all growing together in a responsible way. I think our culture is on fire right now in a good way. So those are the things that we're doing that I'm seeing a huge benefit from. But if I wasn't, okay, read the book, trial and error, I'm trying to shorten the learning curve, I guess is what I'm saying at the end of the day, because I didn't know this stuff. So if we can communicate this and educate these younger folks on this, they may be able to do both. And I think that's what I'm trying to get across.
Yeah. But I think what you said earlier, which is the key here, was that you had to live it.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. I think we can shorten the learning curve. We can try to get to that, but I think people have to live through it. You have to experience. We're all wired a certain way.
Yeah.
I happen to be wired this way, I guess, from kind of a young age. So I didn't go through this aha moment. People say, well, when did you decide to run your company like this? Well, we never decided. We just had employees tell us it was a special place. Then we said, there's something here, and we're going to make this our calling card, and we're going to make this our brand, and, you know, went from there. But most people are like you, who don't really start out that way, and at some point realize that this isn't working, and there's a different way to do it. And then you start to feel the impact of doing it a different way. Right. When I went to that really big company, it's the same thing. I would go to these corporate.
How long did you last there?
5 years. Okay. until I yearned to come back to the small company world. It's hard to move a big ship, but it was really interesting. But one of the things I saw was these corporate refugees, these guys that had been in the corporate world for 20 years and had been just going up and up the ladder, right? And one guy that was head of sales, so successful, and yet we'd get these surveys from the employees, we would do like an upward evaluation, and his scores sucked. Like his team didn't like him at all. And so I pulled him aside one day and I said, Chris, congratulations, another great year. You just hit out of the ballpark, but it couldn't feel good to see the scores like this. And he said, you know, Paul, I always thought I was a great leader. And this really was, this really hurt. I said, well, look, Chris, would you be open to just spending some time together and let's talk? And so he said, sure. So we started to meet every week. And it was just the little things that I tried to impart on him about how when you sit, start that meeting, you don't just go, okay, where are we on this, 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 and this? Here's the goal. You know, let's get the report. You start by saying, how you doing? You let them repeat what the goal is. You let it come from them. You're inclusive. All of a sudden, he starts getting messages from his own team saying, wow, Chris, you're different. Something's different about you. And he's forwarding me these emails. He's just excited about a different way to do it. And so it's so I used to think guys like that were jerks until I realized that's all they knew. Never Lack knew any awareness. Different. And yeah. Exactly. And he was successful all these years. So we all have to go through our thing in order to get there. So I'm not here to, you know, from the very beginning, convert people or convert people that don't get it and say, this is the only way. You do have to live it. It's when you get there and you reached maybe some point or you experienced something or you read a book and said, wow, maybe this can help. And then you just realize that you can grow and have impact at the same time. And now I can have employees who love what they do and I can, we can let them in on our deals and the pride that they must get and you must get out of doing it that way. It's a beautiful thing. It just sometimes takes a while to get there.
Any cons or issues staying small or being a small giant? Any downside that we should point out to folks?
Oh, I can't think of a downside. It's not, it's just a choice of how you want to live your life. And again, we're all looking to grow. We're all looking to support families. You talked about ESOPs. We had our own annual summit just last week, and we were talking about exits. Bo Burlingham, who wrote the book Small Giants, also wrote a book called Finish Big, The Good, Bad, and the Ugly of exiting the business. And guess what, guys? We're all going to exit our businesses at some point. I never built my company to sell it, but I did end up selling my primary company and had visibility into other things I was doing. But thinking about long term is really important. And the time to do that is now. No matter Why? When that is, because if you don't plan for it, if you don't think about it, if you don't think about your life's purpose, which never ends, you're going to end up in trouble, right? You may have a goal like very specific. Hey, we're building this up to sell this company. You know, good for you. Most small giants thinking type companies are trying to build maybe a company that's going to last long beyond them and might sell the business to their employees. Might look at other models of doing it. Most small giants don't have outside investors in the business. And again, that's a choice as well. Nothing wrong with outside capital. In this day and age, it's very hard to start businesses without outside capital. But that changes the nature of the business. So when you listen to some of the stories in that book that he wrote, and he actually told my story in there as well, there are some tremendous stories of people that made tons of money and ended up, as you've heard, depressed and just with no purpose left in life. And so I'm going to be 64 years old this week.
You don't look a day over 49, my friend. You're looking good.
Thank you. And yet this search for purpose never ends, right? So, you know, I built a nice, successful company. I've got Small Giants community. I've got lots of stuff going on and very fortunate and blessed, but we're always in this search for purpose. And so thinking about the long term is not something we really want to spend time on doing. We're just grinding every day, but you need to be thinking about that for your family, for your team, and for yourself.
Yeah, we challenge everyone out there, especially when you're buying multifamily deals, invest with decades in mind. Think about the next decade. You may sell in the next 2 or 3 years. The markets may just be running hot and you did a deal and it makes sense to exit for you. Great. Think in decades though, because ultimately the next 2 years could be down. But if you buy a deal thinking forward, thinking 10 years out and you hold to get to those next 10 years, you're going to be okay. Short-term thinking gets people burned more times than not. So I think that's fantastic. You brought that up.
Yeah. I remember my financial advisor saying that to me when, you know, we would go through the ups and downs of the market. He goes, just relax, you know, just go through it, go long term. And I've never been a big real estate investor myself, but I've always loved real estate in that sense that it just, hey, in the long term, it always goes up. You got to have patience. But that's the way to look at life as well.
Hey, if there's population growth and they keep printing money, you're probably going to be okay.
That's right.
At the end of the day.
That's right.
I love asking people their best habit for success. You've obviously been wildly successful. Anything that you do on a daily or weekly basis that's added value to your life?
I think showing kindness is probably the thing that comes to mind. I think, especially in today's world, we just forget that being kind to people pays all sorts of dividends in all parts of our life. And we don't have enough of that today. And I remember even in running my own business day to day, I would try to impact one person that day with something that I said, a personal note card I would write to their home, or something that I would do. And I think that comes from the ability to listen and to back to caring, listen to what's going on in people's lives. But I just think it's a trait that I work on every day to make sure that I show that to, whether it's, you know, someone in a supermarket or to my kids or to anyone I'm around. I think, you know, self-care is incredibly important nowadays. I have an off and on meditation practice that's really important to me as well. Taking care of yourself, staying in shape, doing all these things. It's, you know, life is hard. And I think we have to, well, many of us will say, well, we're so focused on serving other people and that may be our purpose. We can't do that without taking care of ourselves first.
Get back to the supermarket, folks. I don't know what it is. I love going grocery shopping with my kids. You may have a random act of kindness. You may put your kids in the little cart with the steering wheel on it and do some, you know, sideways turns and squeal out. I have a great time at the supermarket. I think it's good because you're shopping. You're out there seeing what's going on. It's an easy way to spend time with your family and get out there. It's easy to try to systematize everything, but big fan of the supermarket. I appreciate you bringing that up. Gino can't not sit by and not say anything about that.
I was just going to say, try going to the supermarket with six kids and a $900 grocery bill. All of a sudden, and I've done that for years, right? We've got six muffins, three cookies. We've got the cart is jammed. But like you said, people look at it, and one of my core values is really family. So how do I promote the pro-life, pro-family aspect of it? Let people see how amazing kids are and we're the role models. And what is that? You have all your kids around you and people look at us like we're crazy because they don't normally see that. They want to run to the grocery store, but it's an experience. We cook three meals a day at home. Where does food come from? My kids see people work in the grocery store, how hard that work is because dad worked in the restaurant. So seeing the food, selecting with them, letting them, empowering them. What are we eating tonight? What are we eating this week? These are ways that Paul was talking about staying healthy and being healthy and letting your kids. These are one of the fundamental values that kids need to know when they get older. How do I take care of myself? How do I cook and clean for myself? Well, you have to let them be part of your life in that respect.
And a great way to start budgeting. So any book recommendations, anything that you've read in the last few years that you want to share?
Any good book recommendations? Well, I think I think back to some of the books that I've read and one that stood the test of time is Good to Great, Jim Collins' book. And there are I think all of Bo's books, the key is to keep reading, being well-read. My dad's 94 years old and luckily lives at home still with my mom and is so every day reading another book just to learning more. And I think anybody that can pick up something, and there's so much content out there nowadays, can really benefit from that.
That's incredible. All right. Yeah. So talk to us about where folks can get more information about the community and resources and things. I think we hit it once, but just want to recap that.
Yeah. The website, smallgiants.org. And again, lots of good resources there. If you want to receive stuff, you can get on the mailing list. We don't have the community there to make money. It acts like a nonprofit. We are there really to just share impact with people. There is our Leadership Academy. We have our annual summit. But what we say even more than the learning is the relationships you're going to build with like-minded, like-hearted people. So if there's anything we can do with people, lots of resources, books, articles, blogs. I have a podcast where I listen, share stories of other entrepreneurs. So happy to have people join in. But again, what's most important to me is that people look inside. Answer that question that Gino posted early on is, do you have a sense of purpose, values, and vision for your business? Do you have that for yourself? If you don't, that's the first place to look and to go through that exercise with those around you that you hold special to you.
So Gino, small giant or to not? That is the question. What say you?
Mr. Spiegelman started out as an attorney, 2 years, got burned out real quick. Then he started working with his brother up on top of a garage. I would not recommend that to everybody because I was in business for my brother for years. I still work with him. Sometimes it goes
you
up.
You want Marco on the roof and Gino on the ladder.
All right. Yes. Sometimes it goes up the rails, but he built an amazing company, Barrow Health, with 500 hospitals. You have 400 employees, $40 million in revenue. And he thought with the mind, I guess the end in mind of selling it. That is the classic small giant, an amazing company. He sold it in 2012. He got together with Bo Willingham because Bo wrote the book, Small Giants. I recommend that everyone has to go out and grab a copy and read about it and really see what the small giant company is all about. It's not small in revenue. It really talks about culture and core values. And most importantly, to what are, I guess, all of our employees nowadays is they want a company with vision and a company that has purpose and a company that's creating impact. That to me is the essence of what a small giant is. And, you know, just want to thank Paul for sharing his amazing story today and his, you know, and his company, smallgiants.org. So if you're out there and you're wondering, how do I take my company to the next level? I'm stuck. Buy the book and start working on your purpose and your vision.
Paul, thank you so much. Great resource. Really enjoyed the conversation and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thanks so much, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul.